Once again, welcome to the first call of the season. We're excited for all of that we have in store for you this year. The continuing mentoring and topics such as parenting, scholar projects, leadership, mentoring, the liberal arts, and the trivium and quadrivium, and other important subjects. The topic of today's call is about having smart emotional boundaries in the mentorial relationship between you and your mentees, especially since a lot of your mentees are under the age of 18. So we are, and this is a mentor relationship, not as you as the parent and child, but you as the leadership or liberal arts mentor and the child. And we call this common sense mentoring. I'll also review the seven types of mentors, and I'll be quoting from The Student Whisperer. Some of the things that I'm quoting will be out of that book. As the mentors and teachers of the Scholar Projects, as you send in your e-report, we begin to get a feel for what we want to address on our conference call. And this particular topic has not been addressed by us before. So I'd like to start out by asking you to think of various mentors that you've had in your life. And as I mentioned, there are seven types of mentors, and I'd like you to try and remember a mentor in each category, maybe one you had as a child or even currently. And you may not have had mentors in all of these categories, and that's fine, just leave it blank. You can also not only think of mentors that you've had in these categories, but if you are this type of mentor to anyone. Okay, so you can even, on your paper, oftentimes when we do these calls, we'll ask you to write something. And so if it's possible, make sure you have pen and paper with you. So you might want to have two categories going down, one category for mentors that you've had or that you currently have. And if you are this type of mentor and who you're a mentor to, that's the other column. And then the rows going down will be the seven types. So here we go. The first category of mentors is parent mentors. So I'll just kind of describe the general term for parent mentor, and you can put in who your parent mentor is, and in the other category, who you are a parent mentor to. Oftentimes, parent mentors only informally mentor. Sometimes parent mentors will move into the role of formal mentoring. There's a big difference between informally mentoring and formally mentoring. The biggest distinction is that a formal mentor is a mentor that you make commitments to, and they hold you accountable to those commitments. And something really special happens when a mentor engages the formal mentoring tool, because a person's integrity can really, really grow when they learn how to make and keep commitments. And so it takes on a whole new level of mentoring. So oftentimes in our culture, parents generally are the informal mentors, and informally mentoring is very, very important too. A lot of teaching takes place in informal settings and at times that you wouldn't expect, and by example, I think a lot more should be shown than said. Sometimes we really, really, really over-lecture. But basically the six keys of influence start having a role in here, and some of you might not be familiar with those things yet, but basically parent mentors, think of your parent mentors, write them down. You can ask yourself, did my parents formally mentor me? Did I actually make commitments to them and set goals with them, and they held me accountable for those things? And ask about your own youth. We talk about mentoring and parenting a lot. At LEMI, almost everything we teach is applicable to parents as mentors. it's one of the, it's such a vital role that we play as parents, to be mentors. Okay, next category. Soul mentors. Some people in your life just seem to have a supernatural link with you. Others intersect with your life just for a brief moment but leave a lasting impact. When we connect with someone at this deep level, we have found a soul mentor. Soul mentors are also informal, and yet they are true mentors in every sense of the word because of the huge influence they have in our lives. When challenges come, as they do to everyone in life, we naturally turn to soul mentors to lean upon for strength. Soul mentors have much to teach us. They listen to us. They guide us. They're there for us in vulnerable times. For example, in The Lord of the Rings, Sam was a soul mentor to Frodo. He was there for them. He carried him. He admonished him. He believed in him. And he loved him. So think of at least one soul mentor that you have, and maybe you're a soul mentor to someone. Okay, third category, expert mentors. Expert mentors have expertise in a certain field, and they help you on the mini path of success within their arena of special proficiency. You may have had an expert mentor when you learned to play the piano or other musical instruments, or trained your voice, or went on a diet, or trained in the martial arts. I'll tell you who I would want to be my expert mentor. It's Chris Powell. I don't know if any of you guys have ever watched the Extreme Weight Loss movies. But he, when I see him mentoring the people, I mean, he just almost brings me to tears every time because of every mentoring ability that he employs to help his clients reach their health goals. And it's truly inspiring, whether that's that health is something that you struggle with or whatever, but what an amazing mentor. And you should go watch one of those just to see, be reminded of excellent mentoring. Maybe you've engaged a business mentor. Basically, expert mentors can help you in almost any area. And some are more formal than others, such as professors or coaches or brokers or attorneys and supervisors. Others are more fun, such as the uncle who taught you to ride a bike or the grandparent who patiently helped you learn to make a pie crust. In any case, expert mentors share with you their field of expertise, and they acclimatize you to the micro version of the path of all success by helping you to progress. You can think of what you might be an expert mentor in, and someone in your life has been an expert mentor to you. Okay, next category is leadership mentors. Leadership mentors guide you through the liberal arts. We spent a little bit of time during Lemmy Philosophy talking about the liberal arts cycle. We gave a definition of the liberal arts, that it's the studies that have to do with the mind and the heart. And we introduced you the Greek inheritance and the Hebrew inheritance, the trivium and the quadrivium. We didn't take a lot of time going into details into these. We plan on doing that more on these conference calls. And the truth is, each of the scholar projects has elements of the trivium and quadrivium in them. So if you remember some of those, it's like rhetoric, logic, music, geometry, astronomy. There's the different categories. These are the knowledge for freedom. We need to have knowledge in these areas. And as leadership mentors, we are inviting our students onto that path, to begin to understand and gain knowledge in these areas. This is the category you are as in. And, there's two philosophies out there. one philosophy is that no way can you mentor the beginning phases of scholar phase unless you have gone through, unless you have a complete liberal arts education. Okay, that's that you cannot mentor these kids. That's one philosophy. Then there's the other philosophy that you can get the education right along with your students, and you just need to be one step ahead. And that you can bring them along, right along with you. And that's what we have seen happen for the last 14 years that these scholar projects have been taught. That you absolutely can be a leadership mentor and get your education along with your students. And begin to be part of the liberal arts cycle and go through the liberal arts. So leadership mentors guide you through the liberal arts, and you're guiding your students through the liberal arts. They inspire you to get a superb education that prepares you for leadership in your chosen life mission. They help you learn how to think. They guide you and help you overcoming tests, trials, and traps along the path. Another name for this mentor is the liberal arts mentor, or the forgotten mentor, since nearly all but the upper classes in our day have forgotten the link between great education and the classics and becoming leaders. The leadership mentor inspires you to understand human nature, culture, and the connection between human action and results. She helps you to see your own potential, your true inner genius, and to develop it. The type of mentors that we are at LEMI, we are leadership mentors. We invite you and on to the liberal arts cycle and introduce you to these things. We also have expertise. So sometimes it's hard to tell which one, you know, and so we fit under both of those categories if you wonder what kind of mentoring what role we play for you. Hopefully we inspire you to be getting your education along with those you're mentoring. Hopefully we help you understand human nature, your own potential, and how to think and how to see, how to hear, how to listen, how to guide. So think of other leadership mentors also that you may have had, maybe you haven't had. Think of who you are a leadership mentor to. Okay, mission mentors. A mission mentor has a similar calling of life purpose as you and is therefore uniquely qualified to help you on the specific path you have chosen. When a mission mentor formally accepts you, it usually means you're ready for the gifts and challenges he will give to you that help you accomplish your mission. With mission mentors, you may have the opportunity to become more than a mentee. You may grow into a protege and actually do projects with your mission mentor. It'd be really nice to hear some of your mission mentors and who they are and what they've helped you with. And we have many missions in our life. Just so you know, don't think that you have just one little mission. We have a lot of things that we're called to do and be. And so go ahead and write those ones down. Okay, number 6, gurus. These are spiritual mentors. Often they are found in scripture or through your church. Our deepest beliefs. For the secular-minded, gurus are figures of admiration who teach you at your deepest levels. They're usually informal, but at times, and depending on your path or beliefs, you can engage them as formal mentors. Right down. The last category is epiphanies or events. Certain things in our lives provide special, powerful mentoring that changes us and gives us direction or clear direction and truly inspires us far beyond the norm. Epiphanies can be people, experiences, events, or other life happenings that touch and teach and inspire and greatly help us to grow. these are important and life-changing mentoring experiences that we all need. There's just, you can kind of think about epiphanies. Or I remember being 18 when I had a mentoring experience like this. I can't really remember why. Oh, this totally fits into what we're going to be talking about. How funny that this is what came to my mind just now. Wow. Okay, I'm going to share that. I'll share this experience with you. I remember exactly where I was when I had an experience. For some reason, I had become quite critical of my dad. And my dad and I have an incredible relationship. We've always had a really, really incredible relationship. But I had become critical of him. And I can't believe it. I can't believe this is what just came to my mind to share. So I remember I was about 17 or 18. I think I was 18 years old. I think I was still in high school, or I had just graduated from high school. And so it was right in there around my senior year. One of those. I have to think for a minute to see if it was right after I graduated or the year before my senior year. But I think I was 18, so I graduated. And I was on campus at a university. It wasn't a university that I was going to. I just was taking some classes for a week at that university. And I remember walking the 15 minutes from one building, you know, across campus to the other building. And I had all of a sudden this feeling come over me of complete chastisement about the critical feelings that I had been having toward my dad for a couple of years. And I remember, now this experience is so big to me because when we get chastised, we have a choice. And we have a choice to be able to take the heat and let it refine us and ask ourselves and own it. Ask ourselves, have I truly done something wrong? And own it. Own up to it and let it burn, right? Let like if we were a piece of metal and we were being heated so that the dross and the other stuff could fall out of us and we could become pure, right? So when we are chastised, we have an opportunity to become refined and become like a new creature almost. And so I remember when all of a sudden these epiphanies hit me and I felt the feelings of, oh my gosh, I have been criticizing my dad, and I could see the complete wrongness of it and what it had done and what the way it made me feel, and I felt horrible. So when we're chastised, we have a choice to completely block it out and not accept it because it's too painful, and justify ourselves and rationalize our behavior, or we have a choice to feel the heat, go through the pain, and afterward become new and changed. And this was a very significant mentoring experience for me because it taught me that I could go through the pain. I have often said people will ask me, people should ask me, people do ask me, how come you could accomplish some of the things that you've been able to do? And I will tell you it's one thing, and it's because I can take the heat, so to speak. I am chastisable. I 100% know that I make mistakes all the time, and I am totally willing to own up to them. I'm willing to be chastised when it's necessary. So at this time, it's probably one of the hardest chastisements I've ever had in my life, and I was just walking along that campus and had the realization of how wrong I had been to be critical of my dad and the judgments that I had had and the way that I had been feeling about him. And I can't tell you the pain I was in. and how awful I felt and how I just wished I could have hidden, or I mean, it was terrible how awful I felt when I realized. And so I owned it, and inside of me, I repented of the thing, so to speak, and I decided, and I realized how wrong I'd been to have those feelings. And afterward, I was just filled with complete love for my dad. And it's really funny because, you know, it's like, how old am I now? It's like 19 years later, you know, 20 years later. And I've seen my sisters go through different times where I saw one go through a struggle where she was mad at my dad for a couple of years. And we all go through relationship things, right? And I could be there for her and love her and feel no hard feelings whatsoever and realize that, gosh, I have got such a great relationship with my dad. Absolutely incredible. He can make all the mistakes in the world, and I still, and I can. We both allow each other to be imperfect, and how beautiful is that, right? And I know why, and it's because of what happened to me when I was 18, with how much love I feel for him and knowing who my dad is and how privileged I am that he's my dad, right? And, well, why am I spending so much time on this? It's because what I'm going to talk to you about in a minute has everything to do with this, that the thing that had triggered the criticism toward my dad was a mentor. And that's what I'm going to be talking about that in a second. I'm going to ask you guys some hard questions to think about. And so I'll tell you the second half of this story, because I didn't know I was going to tell the story. I'll tell you the second half of the story as we go on. So just realize that epiphanies and events and stuff can also mentor you. That one taught me that it's important to be able to be chastised, because that's how growth comes. That's one of the ways that growth comes. Okay, so I'd like to bring up some questions that as mentors we should take the time to think about, because by thinking about them, we will form careful boundaries around our mentoring. By omitting the thought process, this thought process, we could find ourselves in an accidental, inappropriate relationship with one that we mentor and love dearly. And it could cause heartache to us or to them. The last thing we want is to inadvertently cause heartache when we are putting so much on the line by mentoring. And so that's why I'm bringing this up, is to just help us to conscientiously ask questions we should be asking. It's really unusual for me or for Anality to give a mentoring session with a warning in it. We teach a lot of things, and you know, maybe once in a great while there will be something that comes with a warning. But I have seen good mentors get hurt because some of these things might not have been thought about. And with that, please keep in mind that as I ask these questions, they aren't meant at all to badger or manipulate or any of you into answering my way. In fact, you will come up with different answers, and that's important to understand, but all within a framework of smartness and boundaries. These questions are meant to get you to think about them, to have conversations with your spouses and your friends about them, and to simply be aware of them and to decide what you feel and think about them. Some of the most important things that we do in our scholar projects, you'll see, is to simply ask questions of our students, because it gets them to have certain thoughts. Asking questions is extremely powerful, and sometimes we should ask hard questions of ourselves. These can create general guidelines depending on how you answer, and most important, they can empower you. So these are some questions that great mentors should ask themselves prior to going into a mentorial relationship with the youth. So here we go. When you are mentoring other people's children, the guideline is to mentor them in a way that you would want your child mentored. You if you do this, you'll generally stay in a healthy, good, smart place and develop appropriate relationships. So here are some questions that you can ask yourself. I have various topics here. So I'm just going to start with the most awkward one to start with, I suppose. What would I want someone else talking to my child about personal, sexual, and intimate relationship issues? If so, would I want to be present? What are my boundaries? So first of all, I think of your children. And let me keep asking these questions, and I'm going to kind of clarify this. Does the mentor of my child know what my boundaries are? And do I know my student's parents' boundaries on this topic, the ones that I mentor? Now, we live in a day and age where parents alone aren't enough. There are second witnesses to what the parent mentors are saying, right? And we can be a second witness. And these issues come up. Even if we read in our Shakespeare classes, we read Romeo and Juliet, intimate relationships are going to come up. Sometimes the students can turn them into intimate relationship of a sexual nature, right? And in the classroom, there are ways to handle these things. And then personal one-on-one discussions, there are ways to handle these things. And so the question is, have you thought about how you're going to respond to some of these things? And what do you think is an appropriate way to handle this topic? These are the questions that we have to ask ourselves as mentors. What am I willing to talk about? What am I not willing to talk about? What is appropriate to talk about? What would I want other people to talk about with my kids? In a classroom setting, is it different? So these are things to think about. And again, would I want someone else talking to my child about personal, sexual, and intimate relationship issues? What level seems appropriate, and how should I handle such situations? Okay, that's a big one. You have to do a lot of thinking about, because there's things that are appropriate and things that are probably inappropriate. Okay, next one. Would I want someone pitting my child against me, showing them my weaknesses, and judging the way I parent? Do I ever pit my students against their parents? Or do I continually turn their hearts toward their parents? This is really tough. We have 80% of the people on this call, their students are between the ages of 11 and 16. Okay, but 20% of you have students 16 to 18, and they're different. You know, 12-year-olds are different than 14-year-olds, 14-year-olds are different than 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds, so they're different. They have different needs, and the different ways that they can start thinking independently and about topics and deciding whether or not they view the world the very same as their parents. I mean, it's not like we want to create puppets that have to view the world the very same way their parents do and feel about every topic the same way. We want these kids to think, right? We want to challenge the way they think. That's part of being a leadership mentor, is to challenge the way they think. And you do that appropriate to the age. You challenge a 12-year-old very, very differently than you challenge an 18-year-old. There's a really big difference when it comes to helping them learn to challenge their assumptions. And we want them, you know, even in pyramid where the kids are 13, 14, 15, and they learn about challenging assumptions and stuff, we aren't challenging their assumptions. We're teaching them how to challenge the assumptions of the people they're reading. And we don't really do a lot of direct challenging. But we're trying to teach them how to challenge what they're reading, for them to be able to challenge. it's kind of a fine line. There is a certain amount of challenging that we do. That is very, very different than pitting a child against their parents. And there's a fine line there. So I just want to ask that again. Would you want someone pitting your child against you, showing your child your weaknesses and judging the way that you parent? But then the question turned around is, do I ever pit my student against their parents? Or do I continually turn their hearts toward their parents? Okay, I'm going to go on to the next one. Would I want someone taking long rides alone with my child often and repeatedly, going to parks alone with my child, going to lunch or dinner alone with my child? Do I spend long periods alone with any of my mentees? Or are all of my meetings within appropriate bounds and appropriate subject about appropriate subjects? Remember, this call is slightly a warning voice about emotional boundaries between mentors and mentees. Okay, next one. Would I want my child's mentor to have a relationship with my child that is more consuming, more important, and overshadowing to my own relationship with my child? In other words, would I want my child to value the other mentor's opinion above mine? Do I try to get my mentees to love me more than they love their parents? Does it feed my ego? Does it make me feel special? Does it give me power? Do I ever make them choose between me and their parents? This is a very personal question that I'm asking you to think about, because we are having we know the power of mentoring, right? And there is a relationship there, and you want a relationship there. And a lot of things happen when you have a relationship there. And so to ask a question like this can all of a sudden, like, what? You know, I thought my mentors were supposed to love me. Of course they're supposed to love you. Does it define you, though? Can they love you and the other parents? Because, you know, we're going to get to the next question that says, am I a second witness to the parents' good teaching of my students? Do I build up their parents? Would I want my child's mentor to reinforce the good things I teach and my relationship with my child? It's really easy to see where your boundaries are with your children, and so then it makes it easier when you do that about the way that you're mentoring someone else's child. But there's just a special fine line, and you have to decide what that is, what's appropriate. So that's a really interesting. Again, we want to get our students to think and to feel, not to go around parroting their mentor or parroting their parents. But we start with the assumption that between the delicate ages of 12 and 16, that we are a second witness to the parents. And as mentors, we turn the heart toward the family, not away from the family. And believe me, there's wholesome, great, good relationships that we can be having with our mentees. We just have to make sure that we are not, that we are creating smart, emotional boundaries within these relationships. I have a friend right now whose daughter is older. She's 16 turning 17. And she has a Sunday school teacher that has developed a really strong relationship with her daughter. It's a girl Sunday school teacher, right? So she's in a advisory position over her daughter, and my friend started to get uncomfortable. At first, she fostered it, and she loved it. She even invited the person over for dinner. She was so grateful that her daughter was having this much support at church. Her daughter was happier at church, and everything just seemed so wonderful and good. And then there was this little bit of uncomfortableness where he got her a job, and that was wonderful and needed. She started picking her up and driving her to the job, driving her home from the job. Things started to a little bit for the mom, thinking, I wonder if this is appropriate. And pretty soon they were, she was being picked up for all of the extracurricular church activities, but the other girls in the ward weren't being picked up, just her daughter was being picked up. And so it just, little things began to lead to little things, and the mom couldn't put her finger on it, couldn't figure out what was wrong, it's so imperceptible. It's just really hard to know the proper boundaries, the how much time should my daughter be spending with a single person who's, 27, and is my daughter going to get emotionally attached to someone inappropriately, right? That's what she was asking herself, and pretty soon she flat out didn't feel comfortable and went to her daughter and said, I don't want you being alone with her. You can be with the other girls with her, and let me tell you why, and blah, blah, blah. And the daughter's like, that's fine for you, Mom, but for me, this is really okay. And the daughter wouldn't listen. And anyway, so what I'm talking about here is a deep topic. It's not an easy topic. It's something we have to be aware of. It's something we're taking big responsibility to be mentors to our friends' children. Huge. And I'll tell you what, I am so grateful for my kids' mentors. I am so grateful for the mentor that my daughter had last year. She spent an hour on the phone every week with this mentor, and I am so grateful, extremely grateful for my children's mentors. And all of us are. We live in a time in where we're free to have these kind of mentor relationships, and it's beautiful and it's wonderful. We just have to be smart with them. Okay, let me go to the next one. How can I foster my mentees? How can I help foster my mentees' relationships be really good in their homes? So how can I help my mentees foster good relationships in their homes with their siblings and their parents? Here's one. If there is physical, sexual, or other kinds of abuse that are confidentially shared by my mentee, how should I appropriately handle this knowledge? If it is simply different ideas, parenting style, direction, and value, do I have the mentoring capacity to respectfully keep my opinions to myself? Those are two really different things. And I've been blessed enough to never be put in a situation where physical, sexual, or other kinds of abuse have been shared in confidence with me. I hope I'm never in that situation, honestly. If I was in a situation like that, it would take a lot of thought to know how to appropriately respond. And if any of you have ever been in that situation, then that's a burden. And that, God bless you in that situation. I have been in a situation where I had seen friends, where I've seen children under the age of 8 be physically abused, emotionally abused, verbally abused, and possibly even sexually abused. And that was burden enough to just be a witness to those on two different occasions, two different families where I've been a witness to those. And I'll tell you what, you do not want to be part of something like that. And when it comes, it's an unwelcome coming to be responsible for witnessing things like that. And the burden it is to know what to do about such heavy things. So if there's teenagers coming to you with things, I'm glad that hasn't happened to me. There may be some of you that it's happened to. The question is, if there's physical, sexual, or other kinds of abuse that are confidentially shared by mentee, how should I appropriately handle this knowledge? And I can't give you the answer. You need to just ask yourself the question. And if it is simply different ideas, different parenting styles, direction, and values? Do I have the mentoring capacity to respectfully keep my opinions to myself? Okay, basically, do I have the type of relationship with my mentees that I would feel good about my child having with another mentee? If you can say yes to that, you're in pretty good shape. Is what I say to my mentees something I would feel comfortable saying if their parents were in the room? As Lemmy Scholar Project mentors, you are introducing the youth to the trivium and quadrivium, in other words, the liberal arts, and the scholarship ladders. You are a leadership mentor inviting them to the liberal arts cycle of growth and change. They need your mentoring along the way. They need your love, your vision, your encouragement, your chastisements once in a great while, and your confidence. We can have incredible relationship with those that we mentor, even lifelong relationships, as long as we take the time to ask hard questions and be sure that we're using common sense when it comes to having good emotional boundaries with those that we mentor. I told you that I would finish the story that I didn't even remember that popped into my mind, so I'll finish that before we open this up. When I had that experience of being chastened about the way that I've been feeling toward my dad and the critical nature of what I've been feeling, I have some incredible mentors in my life, and one of my mentors was related to me and was close to me in age and even lived with us for a few years. Well, there were, probably 8 out of 10 things that he mentored, the impact that he had on me in my life for good and have helped me be who I am. He was an amazing friend and best friend to me. Well, one of the bad parts of, it might even be one of the only bad parts of our relationship was the fact that he was critical. We had a few conversations, and this was really funny because it would be when we were in drives because we went to ballroom dance together. I was 15 years old, and he drove me to ballroom dance. And I even think my brother might have been in the car with us, too. I can't remember, but he was specifically talking to me on a few occasions and criticizing my mom and dad. And I'll tell you what, when you are 15 years old, and believe me, it's hard enough as a 15-year-old to be humble to your parents' teachings and parenting anyway. So to have an authority figure who's older than you totally say what your parents do wrong and criticize the things, here's the deal, all of us aren't going to make the perfect decisions. But literally, that hurt my relationship with my dad for 2 or 3 years. Because then I was critical of him for a couple of things. And it really, looking back, it's completely ridiculous things. Absolutely ridiculous, but enough to make me as a teenager be proud and put enmity between me and my dad. And I'm just really lucky that I was chastised and could change those feelings and have 20 years of an incredible relationship with my dad again. And it was a mentor that had planted those feelings inside of me to be complete, that gave me permission to be critical. And so we can be careful as we mentor our students. Okay, how these conference calls work is that I like to open it up for, leave 10 minutes to open it up for question and answer. This is our first conference call of the year. Usually I ask you to keep your questions on topic to what we discussed that day. But if you have questions about the year or some things like that, you can ask them. I may not answer them. I may set up another time to answer them or refer you to where to get the answer. But let's open it up for question and answer. It can be about this topic or about other things, and we'll close about 9 o'clock. So we have about 10 minutes to talk. Now, to ask a question, you just push 5-star. You push 5 and then star. And then I will see a button open up. I'll see your hand on my screen, and I can unmute your line, basically, is what happens. So, do we have any questions? And it takes a minute for... Don't be shy. The good part is I can see half of your names on my screen, so I can always call on someone to share something. But someone have a comment or, okay, good, we've got somebody. Let's go ahead and unmute your line. Sure, there we go. Your phone number ends in 8607. Are you there?
Hi, this is Alicia. Yes.
Hi.
I have a question. We've never done this before. We're just starting this week with our class, but my question is kind of the opposite of what you talked about. I have a son who's going to be in my class, and we have a difficult relationship. And I just wondered if anyone could share what they do so that they're sure to, I guess, keep those difficulties, those family dynamics that are hard, out of class. And I'm hoping that having the other kids there will help me and him to treat each other the way that we would treat other people, you know. But I just wondered if you have any suggestions on that. This is one of the big reasons why I'm doing this project, is for his sake and for our relationship's sake, and to help me be the mentor that he needs.
I'm so glad you asked this question. This is such an excellent question. The first thing that I'm going to refer you to understand you and your son on a whole new level together. And so I don't know if you've ever done this before, but one of the things that we have taught here is about communication styles and love languages and personalities, and know which one you are and which one your son is, because sometimes the very understanding of it could be a personality conflict that you're having. And so to understand yours and his, it's crazy, but if you can understand these three things, so I'm going to name these again. One is the five levels of communication. Okay?
Is that a conference call?
We do. Let me name these. We talk on all three of these, and they're either accessible on the website or they're on your disk. Five levels of communication might even be on your disk. The second one is to understand love languages. So actually how you express love and how you receive love and how your son expresses love and receives love. Okay?
Okay.
He may have a love language that you're not speaking. For instance, I have a child whose love language is physical touch, and she likes to be held and squeezed and sat next to and hugged, and you know, I can physically touch my kids and stuff, but it's not my first or second or third love language, and so I have to set a goal every day to hug her. In fact, my husband's physical touch, three of my children's is physical touch. And so I literally make it a goal to hug my child once a day, each of my children. And I have to actually set it as a goal because I don't like doing it.
Right.
That's funny, you know. And then get this, her second language isn't mine, and it's gifts. And so she likes to be shown that she's loved. And so now that I realize what it is, when I go to the store, I try and pick something up for her. I know it's weird, but I think, oh, what's her favorite fruit, you know? And I pick her up a fruit. Or if I'm in the, you know, I think, oh, does she need a school supply to pick up for her? Or I just try and to express my love to her more, because that's not mine, you know. I feel kind of awkward sometimes when someone gives me a gift, so that's not my first kind of thought to think about giving someone a gift, you know?
Right.
So second one is to try and discover both of your love languages. Now, what I'm doing here, Alicia, this is important, is I'm talking to you about forms. All of these are ways in which we do things, or they are systems or forms. And if we can fix a problem at the level of forms, sometimes 50 to 80% of a problem will go away if we can take it to a form instead of an issue. When we focus on an issue, it's very hard to fix a problem. And I know you asked a question, what do I do in the classroom? But I'm just taking you to form right now, okay?
Right.
To the real deal. Okay, the first thing to help you with your son, whether it's in the classroom or at home, is the different personalities. A common thing that the number one common conflict that a parent has with a child is if one of you are either of these. If you, it's called social orientation. It's a subset of knowing personalities, but it's called social orientation. And if one of your social orientations is competitive or power oriented. So if you're both competitive or
it
if you're
definitely
both,
is.
Or if you're both power oriented, or if one of you is power oriented and the other one is competitive. Now let me tell you how to know if you are. If you are competitive, then if you don't win, you feel like you're bad and that you have no worth. So if you have a competitive social orientation, you need to win. Right?
Okay.
And you need to be strong. You need to be better. You need to be worth something. And if you're, until you have gained character, because you can have a competitive social orientation, but once you've charactered yourself and you learn that it's okay if someone else wins, you learn that you can have joy for someone else when they're better than you. But so until you're charactered, then it is a complete statement of who you are if you don't win and if you're not better than, right? That would be someone who has a competitive social orientation. Now, a power orientation means that you naturally take people's power, and you sometimes do it inadvertently. You have the power. You take people's power until you're charactered. And when you're charactered, you are okay. You have the ability to take people's power, but when you're charactered, you can pick and choose if you take someone's power. Until you're charactered, you just automatically take power. That makes sense?
Yes. And it happens.
Okay, is that where you guys fit?
I think I see both of those with him, and maybe I'm blind to myself. There may be some, I don't know, maybe I'm trying to win too or something.
I know.
That's definitely what I see there with
okay.
him.
Okay, so if this is what now we get to the classroom. So if you find that your son happens to be power-oriented and you take his power because you are too, it's going to kill him. The worst personality conflicts we see among parent-child is if literally they each have one of these, because then they're it's really, really tough. So the first step is to know you and to know them, and that's going to take time. And if you suspect at all that this is a power problem, then you've got to character yourself really fast, and in the classroom, try not to ever take his power. Try, and now this is tough.
What does that mean? Classroom. What does that look like? To not take his power.
For That's someone, first of all, if you tell somebody what to do versus ask somebody to do something, if you tell someone who's competitive or power-oriented to do something, that takes their power. If any time that he is not completely left with choice, and what's tough is he could test you, and he could take your power away in front of all the students. That's why do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I worry about that sometimes.
Yeah, and so you got to be totally cool with it and give him his power back, make him feel comfortable, and yet still keep the respect and power of the other kids. So you got to be like a soft water instead of a hard water, where if something comes at you and it looks like it's going to be a belly flop on you, you become soft and let it move right through you. And I mean, I know it's weird imagery, but if you can become aware at least of the power and help him feel empowered, it's going to really, really help you to always ask yourself, what can I say right now that's going to help them feel really empowered? And that's the question you ask yourself all the time. What can I do right now to help my son feel totally empowered? Believe me, you are in power if you do that, even in the classroom. Does that make sense?
That's a great question. Thanks.
Yeah, I hope this helps you a little bit. I hope that it generally, when you set up the rules of the classroom, he's not going to fight you so much that it embarrasses him. Generally is what will happen, and you keep it fun enough and keep the rules general. And if you ever do have to discipline him, try and do it outside of the classroom, not where everyone sees.
Okay.
Or that will diminish your power in the classroom. But you can have boundaries, and you can say, in my class, I know that at home you don't have to raise your hand and you have a comment. Of course, that would be stupid. But in the classroom environment, please, everybody, raise your hand when you have a comment. You know, you can say stuff like that. You can demand it, respect in your classroom.
Okay.
I hope that helps you. Does that help you some?
Yeah. Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay, good. All right, let's see if anyone else. We have one more question. Let's go ahead and take it. Rowena, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, we have one more. Okay, go ahead, Rowena.
I just, in terms of what we've been talking about today, I just highly recommend the online youth protection training by the Boy Scouts of America.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you. That's an excellent resource. Did everybody hear that? It's the Online Youth Protection Program by Boy Scouts of America. Because these issues are real, aren't they?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much. That will be an excellent resource for anyone who wants. We have one more question, so I'm going to open up your phone number in 4793.
Hi. I actually wanted to let you know some things going on in Mesa, Arizona that you might be interested in. I've felt inspired, and a number of people out here have felt inspired to begin construction of another Commonwealth school class that is focused on music and art.
Fantastic.
So I wondered if I could somehow, I don't know, connect with you to figure out as things move along.
Yeah, email me.
So this year is our first. We have a youth group right now that we're putting the class together for the first time to give us some experience. But I really feel strongly that this is, you know, going to turn into a permanent class that we can present.
Wonderful. Jess, can you tell me what your name is?
Cammie Peterson.
Cammie?
Mm-hmm.
It's Cammie. Okay. Do you have my email?
I don't think so.
Okay. It's Tiffany D. Earl at Yahoo, so D like dog. The TIFFANYDEARL. Email me and keep me in the loop, and then I can, other people, when they have questions about what you've got, I can get you connected.
Okay, so it's Tiffany D. Earl.
Yep, at Yahoo.
At Yahoo, okay.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. Okay.
All right.
Okay, everybody. I know that this was an interesting choice to start out the year to have you ask these questions. I appreciate someone bringing up the scout training online. And, Alicia, thank you so much for sharing. I hope that, you know, you'll be blessed in the classroom with your son, and hopefully those you can learn to understand him and yourself better. And others on the call, believe me, you're not alone. You know, 80% of the people here understand what you're saying because we all go through it. And so, everybody, thank you. And our next call is September 15th, and we'll be breaking out into the smaller groups. So have a great end of the summer and beginning of your school year. Take care. Bye-bye.